Mackenzie,
Lamar.
we are covering Booksmart this week, a 2019 sort of coming of age slash graduation night party film. And I guess just with books in mind, do you have a favorite book? You have a lot of books behind you for those that are on video right now. So I know you have a lot to choose from.
I'm sorry for you guys at home who didn't see my utter blank stare that I just gave Lamar, because I was like, I don't know what you want me to do here. I am paralyzed. Because yes, look at this fucking wall. I have no idea. Okay, but let's take a quick look, shall we?
What percentage of the books on your massive bookshelf have you read? Like,
easily 95.
Okay, so most of the stuff on your shelf has already been read.
Yeah, there's one series here, A Court of Thorns and Roses, that I have not yet started. It has been recommended to me by several people.
That's a big one right now. I've heard that multiple times.
Yeah, and I actually, when I moved, preemptively bought the series to fit it into the bookshelf so I wouldn't have to figure it out later. So that I haven't read, and a handful of these big reference books I haven't read, because they were like from my grandfather left me his library as well, and some of them were big reference books, and I haven't read all of those. I have referenced them a lot, like gone to look stuff up, but I haven't read the whole thing cover to cover. Okay, man, this is hard. I just want some inspiration really quick, like a quick like maybe something obvious will jump out at me.
Well, do you have a book that you've read the most times? Like, is there one that jumps out?
So
I've read this 3 to 5 times or 10 times.
Well, that's kind of where I was going to pivot just now. Okay, actually, I have two answers. One, Harry Potter, as you can see, I am obsessed with, obviously.
What's your favorite of the books of Harry Potter?
I think if I had to pick, I'd probably still go Goblet of Fire.
Okay. A little Cedric Diggory in there.
Yeah, I think I'd still go Goblet of Fire, maybe Half-Blood Prince. They get better and better. That's the thing about those books. They just get better and better. I like in Order of Phoenix that like Harry a switch flips with him and he gets a little sassy in that one. I love where he starts to get a little snarky. Some teen angst is showing up. I like that for him. But yeah, I love that series. I've read all of them multiple times. I think Goblet of Fire, I probably have reread the most, which is why that jumps out at me. But I think one of my favorite more classic books that I've read is The French Lieutenant's Woman, which you can see like in the corner over here, by John Fowles. Very good. I love that book. It's been made into a movie where Meryl Streep stars in it, so feel free to check that out. Understand that it's slightly different than the book because it's a story about an actress playing this story.
You said it's called The French Lieutenant's Woman?
Yeah, The French Lieutenant's Woman by John Fowles.
Is it a spinoff of that Hitman's Bodyguard's girlfriend, wife, whatever that's called? Is it
super not? No. Okay. Really close though. Very close reference. I also really like all the Frederick Bachman books. I've read all of his stuff. It's really good. But my favorite authors are Kurt Vonnegut and Dorothy Parker, like on the whole. Most everything that they have done is great. Dorothy Parker is really well known for like short stories and like really like vignettes. And she's very witty. She's very funny. She's very snarky. Read anything that she writes. It's great. So yeah, I don't know. I couldn't possibly choose. Those are a handful of things that I...
You are literally book smart right now. You are giving people a crash course in literature. I love it.
I am. You're welcome. We had to for this film. We had to do it. Yeah. What about you? Do you have a favorite book? Like, do you have a favorite book series? What would you say?
I mean, similar to you, I've read so many novels over my life of, you know, The Cat in the Hat.
I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. I was like, what is it? What have we read?
Green Eggs and Ham. And it's hard to narrow down.
I do have a children's section of the library, if you'd like me to reference
I need to
that.
Check that out next time I'm over, for sure. Find my next gem, Diamond in the Rough.
The Giving Tree is in there if you'd like to cry.
Hell yes.
You know? Yeah.
Hell yes.
Yeah.
I would say, honestly, the book that I've read the most is The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. You ever heard of that?
No. What is that? Tell me more.
It's kind of a first-person perspective. It's the journal of this child, and you're not sure 100% through. Like, you can make assumptions, and I think the assumption is that he's on the autism spectrum. So it's not outright stated because it's from his point of view.
Sure.
It's basically his diary, and it's his trying to solve.
I love that.
Him solving a mystery of, I believe it's like the next door neighbor's dog gets killed in the night and you don't know why it happened. And it's just his journal of trying to solve this mystery. But you get into more of his family dynamics.
Wow.
And it's very, very interesting. And I just love the perspective. I've actually, just to not play devil's advocate, but some folks who have children on the spectrum or friends on the spectrum or are on the spectrum themselves have said they don't particularly love the book because they don't think, but I feel like when you're on the spectrum, it is not a blanket statement of every single person is exactly the same. So I don't think that's what this book is trying to say.
Yeah.
So to those people, I say, I get it. Everyone is at a different level, you know, of where they are on this. So this is not speaking of everyone who is autistic is this way.
Of course.
And that's not how I read it, but I just find it to be, it's a quick read. It's very touching. It's very cute in different places. And it is sort of a mystery at its core. So I kind of like that one.
Oh, yay. I like that. I think that's a good call out because, you know, everybody brain work different. That's what it comes down to. So that sounds really cool. I'm actually very interested to read that. You, I'll look that up later. And I think, like, as far as book recs, I think it's hard to choose too, because it does totally depend on what are you in the mood for? What are you looking to write? Like, what genre do you love? What, you know, what zone are you in? I have picked up more than one of these books that I love and tried to like reread it, and I'm like, ooh, this is not the vibe right now.
It's,
you know,
not landing
this is not working right now. Yeah. So you never know. So anyway,
I
read
just,
a book.
Read a fucking book.
Read a fucking
That's
book.
The advice.
That's my advice today.
But I was gonna say, like, I've read recently The Stand by Stephen King, which that was my first time reading that through, and it was very long, but very much worth it.
All of his are very long, other than actually his a couple short stories.
And the problem with Stephen King is you can love it for the first 95%, and if he doesn't stick the landing, you feel like you wasted some time. So definitely look for the ones that are better reviewed, because that's probably the indicator of a good Stephen King novel.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that one. And then I read Dark Matter by, I think it's David Crouchley, and that's now an Apple Plus series.
Is it?
And that one was pretty damn good. That was like sort of a sci-fi multiverse story.
Yeah, I have read a couple like beach reads lately, like a very chill, easy read, because I was on vacation. So I was like, I would like to read some easy, chill things. And that I read two Emily Henrys in a row, which the first one is escaping me at the moment. I'm going to be upset at myself. But the other one was The People We Meet on Vacation, which is why I can remember that, which I think is funny. But one of them was like supposed to be an easy beach read, and then it was more emotionally triggering than I expected. And I was like, hey, not what I signed up for. So yeah, read the reviews is a good call out, because people will warn you of what is coming and the vibe of that particular book. But yeah, read a book. And also, other plug, go to your local library to read a book. They have a lot of these books. They actually get a lot of the new releases and things too. So if you're trying to read a new release, and actually if you're in the Austin or surrounding areas, you can now be outside of the city limits, quote unquote, the surrounding areas, and still get a free library card at the Austin Library. So do
it. See, now that's interesting, because I always thought it was library.
Yeah, it's a common misconception, often comes from like the fourth grade ish, how people
say it.
That's
where it started with me. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
I thought it was one of those silent R situations.
Yeah.
That
No, it is. It is. You do enunciate the R, but you know, A for effort.
The more you know, as a star flies across
the
screen.
We need the all right. Well, we're going to nerd some more. Let's get rolling. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And we are going back to school this month, the entire month, and we're closing it out with a strong one, really nerdy, really, really back to school entry this month. This is our final one, Booksmart.
Very fitting, because this one takes place the day before graduation. So we're moving out of our September month to spooky season next month. So it's fitting that we're doing a graduation night
Film. we're going to have lots of like nerd references in this film. And I felt the need to show up accordingly in my beverage, in my costume, the whole thing, in my room. My bookshelves are on display, which they have been if you've watched this, but we're extra nerdy today and I'm super excited. But before we get into all of that, let's start with our beverage, which I'm not going to lie, I did name, but I'm super excited about. What are we drinking?
Yeah, so let's list out the recipe first, because I think that's important in order to get the punchline here. But it's 1.5 ounces of bourbon, 1/2 ounce of Reposado tequila, 1/2 ounce of ginger liqueur, 1/2 ounce of simple syrup. If you have agave, go ahead and use that. And then 1/2 ounce of fresh lemon juice. And it sounds like a crazy concoction. Hence the name, which is what, Mackenzie?
Don't knock it till you try it.
Don't knock it till you try it, as our character Molly says in the film. So yeah, it's interesting. It is very different. How would you describe the flavor of this sucker?
Well, let's cheers and take a quick taste. So okay. Because I made it. I haven't tasted it in a second. It tastes like high school nerd. Yeah.
Is that,
I think that's what I'm going to, I think that's what I'm going to go with.
Eating on the weekends. Okay.
Not often, but you know, when in Rome, check it out. You know, I'm actually really, really terrible at describing flavors. So why don't you try to describe it to us? I like it. I do like it, but it doesn't feel expected at all. You know,
no, you don't typically mix like bourbon and tequila in drink recipes. So I was a little surprised by that. I think
unless
the closest
you're Craft
thing,
World, and apparently
unless
you
you're at Craft World, so thank you as always to them. And I think the closest thing I can compare it to is it tastes like a Long Island iced tea without the carbonation, like without the Coca-Cola in it. So it is kind of on the sweet side, I would say, but it's got like a tartness to it, and it's going down kind of like an LIT.
I actually don't hate it, which he actually expected me to hate it because of the ginger. I am not a ginger person, but there's something about the tequila and the bourbon that like really does cancel that out for me. And I don't think it's like ginger heavy by any means.
No.
And I will say this recipe came about because I named it before he designed it. I was like, this is the name of the cocktail. I need you to make it happen. And so
get in there and create a Frankenstein's monster.
Exactly. Yeah. So he kind of was like, all right, let me start putting shit together that, you know, you wouldn't assume. I do think it's really good. And I also have to shout out my mug. So we talked about my serving here because we were like, well, high school kids, when they drink, you know, it's in mugs, it's in solo cups. It's rarely in the glass that it should be in. So I thought a mug would be fun. But I also thought it had to be a nerd mug. So, and we'll take a picture of this. Actually, I did take a picture of this, but for Lamar's benefit, we're zooming in.
Oh, it's grammar.
Yes, it is okay. The grammar corrections mug, which speaks really Molly to me. Like Molly
it speaks very Mackenzie to me.
Also, yes, Molly and Mackenzie would both have this mug and shove it in your face where it's like the there, but it has expletives involved, which is where the Mackenzie comes in because it's they or they apostrophe R-E equals they fucking are. And it does that, proceeds to do that for the rest of the mug. It's a great time. I love this mug. So extra cheers.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we are, as we said, talking about Booksmart today, which was, we were going by decade. So this is our 2019 entry that gets us in under the wire. And
right before COVID.
Right before the Rona. Fuck.
There were no high school movies in 2020.
Oh my God.
No one was in fucking school. They would have had to do it all over Zoom. Would have been interesting though.
This was well timed. Yeah, man. Nobody would have seen it otherwise. That's the other thing. Like nobody would have seen this in theaters. Also, fun fact, I almost didn't see this in theaters because my best friend and I were supposed to see this. I had bought the tickets. We were going to meet there. I went to the wrong theater, which for those of you in Austin who go to Alamo Slaughter versus Alamo South Lamar, this may have happened to you once or twice. It has definitely happened to me
twice.
They're
only like 10 minutes apart.
They're only, I can tell you that they are not that close and I have had to drive crazy fast to make it. No, they're like 25 minutes apart. And so if you go to the wrong one and you're already up against it, you're not going to make it. And I did not make this movie. And my poor best friend had to watch this by herself. And it's such a best friend movie. But I did go watch it the next night by myself. And it was legit. So
yeah, I remember watching this in theaters. I think I might have actually flown solo. There was a period where I actually really enjoyed going to the movies by myself. I still do on occasion, you know.
I do that a lot. I
saw Alien Romulus by myself last week, and I'm fine with it. But I remember seeing this one in theaters by myself and really enjoying it. It's a good time.
Yeah, I love going to the movies alone, and I was still like just cracking up, you know, in this movie. It was still a really good time. It would have been so much better with my friend there. Sad pants for that, but I mean, it was still a really good time.
I think that's when you know, though, that a comedy is hitting.
Yeah,
when you're by yourself and laughing out loud, you're not doing it for anyone else to hear you necessarily. So,
oh, for sure,
that's when you know that a comedy is actually really funny. You know,
sidebar: have you ever had those theaters that kind of suck and like are not laughing at things that are funny? That always makes me sad. Yeah.
I find it weird when you're in a theater that's got a fair amount of people in it
and they don't laugh.
A joke comes and you're the only one that laughs.
Sometimes
it's
like,
you kind of feel self-conscious about it.
Yeah, you feel
self-conscious. I thought that was pretty fucking funny. Yeah.
And you're like, guys, missed opportunity. Or it's like, maybe you're too witty and they don't get it. Like, I feel
I'm going to make that assumption. We're just better than everyone else.
That brings me to my shirt. Okay. We can't forget to it. I wore a costume. I love that you're not, you have no idea what this segue is. Okay.
I just like the fact that you said, speaking of us being better than everyone else, I wore a shirt. Yeah, let's do it.
No, I wore a shirt about wittiness. Okay. Can you read it? I don't know if you can read it with this from this angle.
All I see is I would challenge you to a battle of wits, but I see you are unarmed. I have heard that quote before. Billy Shakes.
Mr. Billy Shakes. Mr. Yeah. Billy Shakes coming in hot with that one. It's, I think, one of my nerdier shirts, so I had to wear it. But it also, again, felt like something that Molly would wear or say. It was a gift. I did not buy it for myself, but I think it's very funny. And that is what that makes me think of in the theater, of like, you guys just don't get the joke. Why aren't you laughing? I don't understand.
I feel like that reminds me of William Lichtner from Can't Hardly Wait. That feels like a quote he would love.
Yes. Also.
Yeah.
Yes. Correct. Okay. So after our 12 nerdy sidebars, I apologize. We will get to the basics of this one. So this is 2019, like we said, 7.1 out of 10 on IMDb. Pretty solid. Yeah. On Rotten Tomatoes, even better, 96% from critics, which is a fucking rave, as we know, and 77% audience too. So people who did see it, which we talked about, like, not a lot of people we feel like saw this. It was like underwatched a bit, but
yeah,
people who saw it loved it. Loved it.
Yeah. Which I think for today we probably will have a non-spoiler review, just because I don't think enough people have seen this, frankly. But I think that what it does is, it is kind of tropey, and it's definitely a combination of not only the three movies we've already covered this month and some of those tropes, but definitely Superbad is mixed in there as well. And I think that's spoken to from the fact that I remember telling people, you know, it's when I was trying to sell people on going to see it, I was like, did you like Superbad? Yes. Okay. Then go see this, 'cause it's a female version of Superbad.
And now I feel like, that's what they said to me last night. Our friend said that last night, and I never thought of that, but you're right.
It's interesting to think that. And I feel kind of bad saying that, 'cause I don't want to be like, oh, it's this thing, but with girls. That feels a little like underselling
reductive.
It.
Yeah.
But yeah. I do think there's something to the fact that even though this came out in 2019, the first draft of the script was written in 2009. Which is only a year or two after Superbad came out. So it makes sense that the original writer, and there's like a cavalcade of writers on this script.
I was going to say there's 27 writers, but I have the reasons they were all brought in. Don't worry. We'll get there.
Okay. But it makes sense that they might have said, hey, this is like another wave of these high school comedies. Let's do something for the girls, which is awesome. But when we get to the plot, we'll talk about where it overlaps and where it doesn't. But I think it does its own thing enough, and it's enjoyable.
I also think it's okay to tell the story of like guy best friends and girl best friends, because that is a very different dynamic, right? Like, that is not an unoriginal story. Maybe it's inspired by Superbad. Let's just assume that it might have been, right? It still is an original story, because those dynamics and those relationships are wildly different. You know, the way that the male friendships versus female friendships and that crossover is really different. And it shows up here too. Like, this story, the high level concept is very similar, but it's executed very differently, you know? So I totally agree. I think it is a bit of an homage there maybe, but it is so worth a watch and a very original take on that story.
Yeah. I think it actually benefited by it coming out 10 years after it was written, because it felt new and fresh and they were able to tap into the 2019 high school generation and what the social media and all those different, the new clicks and whatnot that weren't present in movies like Can't Hardly Wait and then Superbad. Yeah. It's definitely.
And they modernized it a little, you know, so you felt the difference there. And maybe that's why it didn't even stand out to me. You know, like I didn't think of that until somebody brought it up to me and I was like, oh, okay. And yeah, it had been a while since I saw Superbad. So to your point, like spreading it out, I think totally landed as well. So anyway, this is directed by Olivia Wilde, who I think is a really interesting and innovative director. She's had a little bit of controversy around her, as I'm sure you guys may have heard in the news. Even if you're not a big like movie buff, you probably heard some of that. But I would say independent of that, her work is very interesting. And she has done Don't Worry, Darling.
Isn't that where most of the drama stems from?
That's where most of the drama stems from. Mm. Her and some of her lead cast did not get along, it seemed like. She was also, we got to give her credit, like she was going through a divorce from Jason Sudeikis at this time. Everyone, I can speak from experience, is not their best self going through a divorce. So let's give her a little bit of grace there. But she had issues there. She was also dating Harry Styles briefly and, you know, drama ensued. But
yeah.
I thought the film itself also was very interesting. So if you haven't checked it out, definitely recommend. She's done a bunch of music videos as a director, and she did a short called Wake Up, which was also good as a director. But she, prior to that, was mostly known for her acting credits. But I think she's shown that she's a really solid director in both of these big, you know, feature films.
Yeah, she's got a varied career, and she's one of the few who I think a lot of times actors do 10 or 15, 20 movies and then they decide they want to go into directing and producing. She's kind of experimented with all, you know, she was in Tron Legacy back in the mid or late aughts, I think that was. And then even recently she was in Ghostbusters Afterlife. She was Gozer, like the villain in that. So I thought that was kind of cool. But Olivia Wilde is a case where she's obviously still beautiful. Like she can do these on-screen roles, but I like that she has just been like, I want to try different things. I've done a little writing, a little directing. Good for her, you know?
And I haven't seen, I actually was curious about this and didn't get time to research it before we had to pod, but I was curious if those other things were a vehicle for her to get to this goal. You know what I mean? Maybe. Like, what if those things were the in for her to get to the thing that she actually wanted to do, right? Because as you mentioned, she's beautiful. And I think some of her earlier roles were more like eye candy-esque, you know, and possible modeling. Like, she was definitely modeling for a bit there that I saw. I don't know if that was the main thing. But, you know, she segued pretty quickly into trying to direct music videos and shorts, like we said, and stuff like that. So it feels like maybe that was what she discovered was her actual calling, because she's not doing as many roles. And even though she's in Don't Worry, Darling, she's definitely a supporting cast member in that as well. So interesting stuff coming out of her. And she's got, I think, 6 upcoming projects. So keep an eye out for her future stuff as well. Yeah.
Now this was from happier times of her and Jason Sudeikis, right? Were they dating when this movie got made?
I think they were married. I think they were married when this was happening. Yeah. So I think that's how he's in here. You know what I mean? Like a little cameo from my hubby. You got to like come make an appearance. And his cameo, well, not quite a cameo, but his small role here is still impactful. It's still funny and he's a good time. But to get into the gaggle of writers, as you mentioned, quite a few on this, 4 credited writers on this film: Emily Halpern, Sarah Haskins, Susanna Fogel, and Katie Silberman. So I will explain the phases as we go through their works. Emily Halpern did the first draft of this. So the one that you mentioned that was a few years back. She did the first draft. She has written for Spartan, Heist, and Black-ish. So Black-ish is a TV series. The first 2 are films if you haven't seen them. Spartan is really good. I don't remember if I saw Heist. It looked familiar though. Sarah Haskins was a contributor to the first draft as well. Not the primary writer, but a contributor to the first draft. And she has done Get Him to the Greek, Celeste and Jesse Forever, and also worked on Black-ish.
Underrated. Celeste and Jesse Forever.
I was just about to say that. That is a very good movie. I definitely think it's really good and you should
I don't think it breaks brand new ground. It's tropey, but it kind of flips tropes on their head because typically when you see a breakup rom-com, it's the guy character that you're focusing on who goes into like a dark place and gets all sad, but finds a cute girl. This is the opposite. It's kind of like, what's her name? Rashida Jones. Rashida Jones is that character where she's the one that's like starts drinking and kind of goes to a dark place, and she's the backbone of the comedy of the film, which I think is kind of cool to see.
Super valid. Like, people absolutely have that experience. So I think it's cool to show both sides of it. Like, that is not a unique to male story, right? So they both kind of partnered on that first draft. And then Susanna Vogel was brought in later, much later, like several years later, to write the revision on this story. And she's the one who actually did, I think, a core change to the story of, rather than these girls looking for prom dates, who should be boys, they changed one of the primary characters, as we know, to be a lesbian, and they were no longer seeking dates for prom at all. They were just trying to have this last night of freedom before they graduate. And it wasn't like, the premise wasn't exactly the same, but it was still this like just this one fun night, and one of them's gay.
Well, she, props to Susanna Vogel, though, because I think that, again, maybe it's a product of them waiting, you know, 8 or 9 years to actually start filming this.
Yeah.
But I think that's what makes this stand out, is it's not them trying to fall in love. Mm-hmm. The impetus for the plot of the story is that they've worked their asses off through high school, but that's all they've cared about. And then this is the night where they're going to try to let loose and go outside their comfort zone. And I think that plus her being interested in another woman who she's not sure, like, I don't want to get into spoiler territory, but I think that that all makes it a better film in the long
run. And I think it also makes their dynamic more interesting on the whole. You get a lot of opportunity to write some cool stuff in about the two of them. You know, they're best friends and they love each other, but it opens up a lot of comedy around that, around one is not gay and the other one is. And so, you know, it's
the parents.
It's super fun. She has written for reference Flight Attendant, which is a series that I resisted really aggressively for a long time, but I actually recently got into and is pretty good. She also wrote The Spy Who Dumped Me, as far as feature films as well. So funny, clever kind of content. Flight Attendant is very witty, very funny. Katie Silberman, who is our last writer credited, seems to be one of the most, if not the most impactful. She did the second revision and she kind of changed it to being, they did high school wrong being the concept of what if you fucked up your high school experience and you got to the end and you panicked, right? So she-
I have to thank her too.
Right. So she brings in that other, I think, core concept versus the other person changed fundamentally the characters. So anyway, I think that all of these writers on this story were critical to get us where we are. They're awesome. Yeah. And she did Don't Worry, Darling, as well as Set It Up, which is like a rom-com that I am shamelessly obsessed with. I think it's hilarious.
Never seen that one.
I'm not a huge rom-com person. Like, I respect a rom-com. They can be good. I'm not saying that. But I'm not a huge fan all the time.
Who's in that one?
Zoe Dutch is it. She's the lead, and she is, you know, meets this other assistant guy who's played by Glenn Powell, and they both work for these monsters, Lucy Liu and Taye Diggs characters. So it's like, it's a fun time. It's on Netflix, and it's, I think, an underrated rom-com. I don't know what it, how it performs or how it's rated and reviewed, but it's really fun. And she wrote that as well. And I was kind of like, okay, that checks out.
We talked about Zoe Deutsch on a different episode. I don't remember which one it was because I said Zoe Deutsch Chanel, but I can't remember what Zoe Deutsch was. It, or maybe we talked about her dad. Is he like a director or something?
I think so. I
don't, we don't need
she's
to
really
all
good.
This.
Just, it's she's really good is the like point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like her a lot. So anyway, check out Set It Up on Netflix. She also did Isn't It Romantic, which is with Rebel Wilson, which is supposed to be kind of like upending the rom-com, but I haven't seen it. I don't know. I've heard good things, but I haven't seen it. So All right, let's blow through the cast if we can. Major cast and crew, Beanie Feldstein, which we mentioned, Molly Davidson's character, who is a super nerd, one of our two leads here. She's been in Lady Bird. She did American Crime Story Impeachment, where she played Monica Lewinsky, which I haven't seen, but I've heard very interesting things about. She also did How to Build a Girl. And she also, fun fact, was in the revival of Funny Girl on Broadway. Not to much acclaim, unfortunately, and I felt real bad for her, but I thought that was a really brave choice. That is a very hard role to reprise, and she tried. So she's well-rounded, and I think did a really good job in Lady Bird as well. I haven't seen How to Build a Girl, though, so I don't know how that
she
one
was
is.
Also in the second Neighbors movie with like Seth Rogen, Zac Efron. I think that was kind of her breakout, and I don't think, I'm not gonna say this as though no one out there knows this, but in case you didn't for some reason know, she's Jonah Hill's younger sister.
Yeah.
And so Jonah Hill's real name is Jonah Hill Feldstein, or Feldstein, so his middle name is Hill. He dropped the last name for this, so I would assume her middle name is something really bad that she doesn't want to drop the letter. Like,
maybe she's just really proud of her Jewish heritage. I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe it's like, I don't know.
I do feel like Jonah Hill is a more commercial name. You know what I mean? I think like a lot of people do that, is they're like, what's a more commercial sounding name? But it's funny, in this movie, you see that. You see their faces. And I don't know.
And when we say the super bad parallels, I don't think it helps that literally Jonah, she's playing his version of, like, her version of his character in this. But maybe it's like a Beanie Vomit Feldstein. And that's why she was like, you know what? I'm not gonna do that. We're not doing that. I'm just gonna stick with my real...
it's something like Agnes. You know what I mean? Like some Beanie really Agnes. Terrible, like old timey name. That's pretty always Agnes. What I also hate my middle name. So I hear you. Just drop it.
What's
stick
your
with
middle
the last
name, Kenzie?
Have I not? I feel like I've revealed this on the pod, but if not, it's Kristen with a CH. E-N at the end.
Kristen E-N.
And I don't love it. Y'all, if you haven't met me in real life, it is not my vibe. I do not feel like it is my vibe. I feel you, Beanie.
But yeah, I think that it, in ways, it doesn't hurt. I guess we can get more into this when we get into the plot, but it doesn't hurt that this is kind of giving you super bad vibes at the beginning. But there are scenes in this where you're just like, okay, they just want her. They were like, do what your brother did in this movie and kind of be that. Yeah. I don't know if that was the guidance she was given, but it doesn't help that they look exactly the same at certain moments their facial expressions
are like, whoa.
I'm just like, this is just exactly the Jonah Hill Michael Cera dynamic from Superbad.
And I kind of love it. Like, it worked. It totally worked, but I agree with you.
Yeah.
And speaking of the Michael Cera dynamic, so Caitlin Dever plays Amy Ansler. She's been in a few things. She was also, funny enough, in a movie musical, Dear Evan Hansen. She was also in Ticket to Paradise, which comes up again later. She's done a lot of TV, but one of the ones I wanted to call out the most of hers that I think is really well done is a TV series on Netflix called Unbelievable. And it's a really tough subject matter. So I'm not going to like trigger warning, get into all of that, but it's about sexual assault and not being believed. And she does an incredible job in that series. So if you haven't seen it, I would check it out. It's not a really, really painful watch. I don't mean that. I just mean it's a tough subject matter. It's a really good show though.
Okay. I know that she's been cast in, I'll have to check that out, cause that sounds interesting, if not hard to watch, but like, also, she just got cast in The Last of Us. So if you watch the first season of The Last of Us, she just got cast as a major role in season 2. Ooh. So that should be interesting to see. I'm happy for her in that case. I also feel like she kind of overlaps a little bit, because I always get her and Thomasin McKenzie mixed up in some ways. They have sort of a similar look. She was in Jojo Rabbit. She was in Last Night in Soho. And I looked it up on their IMDb's. So they started acting like 6 months apart. One was in 2011, one was in 2012, their first roles. And I feel like they might compete against each other in roles at times of, oh, we need this girl who's kind of mousy, but also kind of strong. And I don't know that that's actually what's happening, but I do confuse them. And the last call out that I wanted to make, and this is going to be a running theme through today's cast and crew, is I've got some like diamonds in the rough in case you haven't watched some of these things. So Caitlin Dever was in a, I think it was a Hulu original. It was called No One Will Save You. Did you watch that?
I didn't. It's on my list. I haven't watched it yet. You saw it?
It's a good, if you want like an October watch, we got spooky season coming up. It's basically an alien invasion movie, but it is unique in a very specific way that I won't spoil, but you'll catch on to it as you watch the film. And it's very interesting. It's about a girl who is kind of a pariah from her town. She lives by herself, but no one in her town is talking to her for some reason. And they sort of reveal it through the film, but then there's an alien invasion and she's just sort of left to survive by herself. Mm, but it is mm-hmm. a really compelling story, and there's a unique twist that I won't ruin here. But
okay, now I have to watch it. As soon as I finish Flight Attendant, I'll have to get that on the list. But well, it's on the list. I have to watch it. Love it. Okay. Sorry guys, we're going down some rabbit holes with these people. I'll try to hustle. So Jessica Williams plays Miss Fine, which I think is a fun turn for her. She does a really good job. You probably know her from The Daily Show, Two Dope Queens, possibly Fantastic Beasts if you're a nerd, and then Shrinking on Apple TV Plus, which I haven't finished either, but I did start and sort of forgot about, but it was pretty good what I saw. So check it out. Jason Sudeikis, as we said, makes an appearance. Principal Jordan Brown, he is so over it. He is so over the end of the school year, which as a former teacher, I'm sure you can relate to. He has, of course, been Mr. Ted Lasso. He's done Horrible Bosses, Colossal, which is, I think, an underrated one as well, and a very interesting turn for him if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I loved Colossal till there were like 30 minutes left in it, and then I applaud them for taking a risk, but I didn't love the way the story
You didn't like it? No. I think I haven't seen it in a while. I feel like I remember liking it on the whole, but I do remember the ending being divisive. Some people loved it, some people did not. He also, of course, was on SNL quite a bit. But one deep cut that I wanted to call out from personal experience is Kodachrome, where he stars with Ed Harris and Elizabeth Olsen. It's a Netflix, I think, original, if I recall correctly. And it's a really interesting, heartfelt story and a very different turn for him and a very interesting dynamic between those three. So if you haven't seen it, Kodachrome on Netflix is really interesting. Billy Lord plays Gigi. She was one I wanted to shout out. She's a funny character here, but also she's been in Star Wars 7, episode 7, 8, and 9, if you want to check her out.
Why she's in Star Wars?
No.
Why? She's Carrie Fisher's daughter. I did not know that.
I did know that. I guess I didn't connect those dots, but checks out.
I mean, I would assume. I think that's how nepotism works. It's yeah. Like, hey, I'm in Star Wars. Do you want to be in Star Wars? Okay.
It Welcome. Seems a little late for her to, you know, to join and cash in on that, but I guess so. I guess so.
She was also in that show Scream Queens. I don't know if you ever
I never
that,
saw that.
That had Emma Roberts in it.
That did, and that, yeah.
It was okay. Jamie Lee Curtis was in there. It was like a good cast, and it was like, it gave was me, kind of...
What is that stupid ABC Family show that's like about a bunch of girls who have a secret? I don't know what
Doug.
Yes, that one. How did you know? No, just it gave me vibes of this like other very
was
tween
not,
show.
Was Pretty never, Little Liars?
Yes, Pretty Little Liars. I never saw it, but it just gave me like Pretty Little Liars
like
tween vibes.
It was a satirical slasher,
okay.
Basically. Like people are getting killed, but it's these rich princesses who don't really give a shit about it. Like they're still so vain. It's kind of mashed up with Mean Girls a little bit. But yeah, very, very funny and satirical. And it was like Glee's sense of humor. Mixed with a slasher film. Mm-hmm, and it's not perfect, but it's worth a watch.
Well, that's good to know. She also was in Strange Planet, which, fun fact, is based on a comic little strip that I am obsessed with and have been obsessed with for many years. I have the little, like, print books of it. So if you've never seen Strange Planet, the comic, check it out. They're very funny. They're supposed to be like if humans were aliens. Anyway, you'll get it when you read it. She was also in Ticket to Paradise, which again, I think is a little callback to our girl Amy Antler in Ticket to Paradise. So maybe they met there and she referred her. Who knows? Diana Silvers plays Hope. She was in Glass. She was in Ma. She was in Space Force. So she's in a lot of like actiony, dark and twisty other than this one. So she kind of has a type, folks. And this one was breaking that type. So that was interesting. And then one of my favorites, Skylar Gisondo, not just because his name is Skylar. I love his character, Jared.
He might be my favorite.
He's so
I know
fun
that
and
we
wholesome.
Have our two protagonists who are great, But every scene he is in, he kills it.
He kills it. He steals the show. He's so wholesome in all kinds of unexpected ways when you, like, look at him, you know? So he's...
I wrote down that he's kind of like, if for those of you who watched Parks and Rec, he's, at least in the first 80% of the film, he's a mashup between John Ralphio and Andy. Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing this over-the-top party persona, trying to get everyone to like him, but he's still likable and lovable like an Andy Dwyer and kind of naive. So I feel like if you push those two characters together, you get a Jared in this film.
Yeah, he's super fun to watch in this one. We'll get into it. But Molly Gordon also plays Annabelle, also known as AAA, which we don't love. She is, you would probably recently know her from The Bear, where she
Claire
does
Bear.
Claire Bear. She does a great job. Theater Camp, You People, Shiva Baby, which I haven't seen, but I've heard good things about. And
you mentioned Theater Camp that she's in, and Noah Galvin, who is George in this, is in that. And I think I texted you about Theater Camp when I watched it, and I exceeded my expectations. I was sort of tempered in what I thought Theater Camp would end up being. But if you want sort of a slightly absurdist but kind of cute comedy, like think Wet Hot American Summer, but a little more realistic and a little more heart to it and moral to it, I think Theater Camp it's a good watch on Hulu.
Well, I totally second that. I think Theater Camp is great. And I think that, you know, they have very different characters than this, you know. Molly gets to play somebody very different in AAA here. I like that her character evolves and you get to learn more about her quite a bit as well. So that's fun. Yes. Last couple, and then we're going to get into it, I swear. Lisa Kudrow, who we know from 12 million things I probably don't need to tell y'all. She's Friends, Romeo and Michelle's, High School Reunion, The Comeback, Easy A, lots of TV, blah, blah, blah. Will Forte does Doug Antler, which is, these are the parents. These are the super fun parents that deliver a lot of comedy here for us. He's MacGruber fame, Lego Movie. He also did Nebraska, which if you haven't seen, is a very different energy, very different vibe, Academy nominated film. Check it out. Very different character that he plays. And then tons of TV. So, okay, we did it. Only 12 hours later, plot summary. And then we'll do our spoiler-free rating, and then we'll get into the good stuff. Plot summary is, on the eve of their high school graduation, two academic superstars and best friends realize they should have worked less and played more. Determined not to fall short of their peers, the girls try to cram 4 years of fun into one night. Which I think is a great premise. It's true.
Yeah,
that's pretty accurate.
Again, I don't think it's spoiling anything because it's in the description there, but I love that just the impetus for this is she thinks, you know, Molly thinks, I busted my ass, I'm valedictorian, I'm going to be, all this work I've put in, I'm going to be so much better off going forward in life compared to these other slacker classmates of mine that have made fun of me all this time. And then the impetus is just she finds out, oh, these people are going to the same prestigious universities that she thought would be exclusive folks like her. And she realizes, holy shit, I could have been having fun this whole time. I like that that's the plot here.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a fun concept because, you know, we've talked before about, like, do you learn from things? You have regrets from things, you know, they are not this living this no regrets life. They have this immediate wave of regrets, right? Like, she goes around, she surveys everybody. She's like, motherfucker, I did it wrong. Right. So I like that, like, notion of panic. Like, we can still do this. We can still check this box. And it's just done with the same neurosis that she clearly just has in everything that she does. And it's not, oh, we have to do this in this chill. Let's go to a party because we've never done this. It's a, like, we have to do this very specific way. We should do it right now. You know, it's a really funny reaction, I think.
No, I'll segue from that into my pre-spoiler rating, which is another thing here is I saw this when I was 35.
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked in the past few weeks of, oh, if I'd seen Breakfast Club earlier, it would have hit different. Or because I saw Can't Hardly Wait when I was in high school, it hit different. This is one where I saw it at an older age and I still really enjoyed it. I feel like I would rate it even higher if I could relate to it a little more. But I just think that overall, if I'm going to score this right now, early on, before we get into the spoilers, it's not perfect. There are parts that drag a little bit for me. There's a little bit of, there's bits. It feels like we're, it's one of those films where you're moving from bit to bit of, hey, this would be funny to do. Hey, this would be funny to do. Let's like try to string this. It's kind of a, I don't know what you compare. I mean, Superbad, it seems too easy. We've mentioned that one a few times, but like, what's another one that we've done where it just seems like sketch after sketch after sketch and you weave them together, kind of like the Sandlot we described as that, where it's moment after moment and there's this general plot through line, but this is taking place over one night. And I think there's a couple of moments like that where it feels a little forced and there's a few pieces of humor that didn't land this time or the first time I saw it. So it's not perfect, but I think it's a lot of fun and it's a cool spin on the high school party genre. So I'd give it like, I think I'm pretty much in line with like the IMDb. I think it's like a 7. There's things that I'm going to talk about that are, you know, don't hit for me, but I think it's a really good movie.
I think it's super good. You got me distracted. I'm like scrolling through our previous podcast trying to figure out which ones it reminds me of. Anyway, I agree with you though. It does feel like some certain things are just some bits. It does feel like this journey kind of film, but it does it in a really funny way. I love the premise. I like the writing. I think it's so clever. I LOL every time. So I genuinely like just have, I just crack up again, like to your point, alone in a theater, alone at home. I'm just cracking up at this movie. So I think I would give it like an 8. I have a great time watching this movie. I think it's really well done. I think it's a good modernization and the performances are awesome and hilarious. So yeah, definitely go check it out, guys. All right. Now's the time, and we're going to, you know, we're not going to get too deep into it just for the sake of time, but we're going to talk about some favorite parts, but it is spoiler time. So turn around, don't drown.
Here we go.
All right. So I have so many notes. I have so many like funny reactions to this. So many like fan LOLs about Skylar being hilarious in this movie. I love the opening affirmation though. Like we got to talk about how she starts her day. Molly's character has this voiceover affirmation from like a, you know, think of like a calm app or a Zen kind of motivation kind of app. And the hype girl is Maya Rudolph. So that's my favorite, one of my favorite parts. And the shit that she says to her is so aggressive. It is not Zen. You know, it is like, you're fucking better than those people. You know, it's so, but it is hilarious. And, you know, and she has like the retainer moment as well and all that. I just think it's such a, it really sets the stage for this person's character.
You know who this character is in the first like 30 seconds of the film.
Yeah. And she hasn't said a word and you've only looked at her back. And it's hilarious. I love it.
She goes outside and we get the, this is where the first, where I say, hey, this is trying a little too hard to hit that super bad nerve is when they're doing the dance off going to the, which is cute. But I think because I went into it thinking, oh, it's like, it just, I was like, okay, so it's just, this is the Michael Cera, this is Jonah Hill, like, this is what we're doing here.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I just see them, though, and I'm like, these are my girls, man. These are funny, you know, affirming partners, teammates. Like, she's coming down the stairs, she's doing her little dance, like, she's getting hyped up before she even gets there. Her friend gets out the car and is, like, hyping her up. Like, this is just so this energy of, you are the best, I love everything about you, I'm affirming all the fucking weird that is happening in front of me right now. And I just think you should, you know, you always need your homies to affirm your weird. And I love that they are that for each other. It's awesome.
Yeah. Like, we get them really quickly introduced, and then when they get to school, I think this is another one like Can't Hardly Wait, where they're tapping into all these side characters inside, for lack of a better word, like stereotypes of these types of people. And it's, I like that it's fun to see Breakfast Club to Can't Hardly Wait to Mean Girls to Booksmart, and seeing the way that high school stereotypes have kind of evolved. And I enjoy in this one that they're all in the same classroom. You kind of have these like burnouts, and you kind of have this student, and you kind of have this student. And I like that one development is Skylar's character, Jared, who is kind of this, he's well off, you know, he's privileged, but he just wants to be liked.
He just wants to be friends. He just wants friends.
Character. I love that he walks in. He says, "Here's a gift from my favorite teacher," and she goes, like, "You're not my student." And he goes, "I've heard good things." Like, just that, in a nutshell, is why he's like my favorite character, because it is a real thing. It's just people who want to be loved. I don't know.
They do, and he's like, and he's wholesome about it. Again, his vibe is douchey, right? Like, he dresses kind of like a douche. He has this silly car. He's, you know, our main character who we already kind of like, is really openly annoyed with him. So you sort of assume that he's going to be annoying and that you're not going to like him. But against all odds, you like him pretty much the whole time. Like, he's very wholesome. He's funny. He comes and gives a gift to a teacher. So I'm his teacher. And he's like, "You seem great," you know? And I just love, this is very physical. I don't know if this is this guy or just this role, but like his just big old grin that he has on his face the whole time. Like, his smile is like a 1,000-watt smile, as they would say. And it's just very endearing, I think, on the whole.
That's what Janelle said. She was like, he's kind of doomed to always play this like teenager, this lovely teenager until he dies, because he has this young face and smile. So it's like Santa Clarita Diet and even Righteous Gemstones. He plays like the oldest son in that. And he's, I don't know how old he's going to look in 5-10 years, but you know, maybe he's still doing high school movies.
Hey, if you can pull it off, by all means, have a great time. Not all of us can pull that off. You know what I mean? So for sure. And then I just love the entry of, I have in my notes, literally, the gays are here. I love it. Because they are fucking hilarious. And they're not just the gays. I love the gays, but this is the theater kids, man. Yeah. Like, my theater kids are my people. They're also the most extra theater kids you've ever encountered. They're a hyper caricature of this as a theater kid. And I know you, as a former theater teacher, are like, this is a lot, but they're hilarious. And my favorite line from that is, he's like, "I don't audition. I'm offer only." I was like, in fucking high school, this guy is so extra. It's outrageous. But I love, again, like, all the witty repartee. I love that he has this kind of nemesis relationship with Molly, and they just have this back and forth, these digs, and he walks past her and whispers in her ear, like, really aggressively, "Nobody's winning in that outfit." You know, I just love how it lands. I just love all these different, I don't know, kind of cherry on top characters for me.
I think for a film like this to work, where you know the goal of the whole thing is that they're going to end up at a party with all these different people. And I like that this one weaves in multiple locations and set pieces where we engage with all these different characters. But you have to have side characters that work and are entertaining by themselves without the sort of two female protagonists being the focal point constantly.
Like, they can be the anchor, but these can be these fully developed people and feel really real, you know, even if they're a caricature, but like, they feel like a real person that could exist and could have have these experiences and be somebody that you encountered in school potentially. And it really lends some credibility to like this whole universe, right? And I think like, we get into that with a lot of the other characters that you encounter, like, at a late, you know, later in the story, but leading up to the party, that they're like, we're trying to get to this party. All these, they're trying to find these other characters, these other types of people that you can tell they know and interact with, but they do not hang out with, you know, like they just don't spend time with them. So it feels like we're discovering these characters, but so are they, in that they're discovering more about them, you know, as you go through the story.
I like that. Again, we talked about Mean Girls last week having kind of a moral to it. And I think this does as well. And it's kind of indicated in her valedictorian speech when she talks about, "Hey, I know you guys, but I don't really know you." And I think this does a good job, not just in the beginning scene, but throughout, of establishing that it's not displayed how it was in Breakfast Club or Can't Hardly Wait, where it's like, these are cliques. It's not like that anymore. It's just, you have your circle of friends that you prefer to hang out with, and we might bump each other a little bit or rub each other the wrong way, but no one is exclusionary in this.
And
throughout it, if anything, the person who's exclusionary is Molly, because she thinks she's better than them because she's working harder and smarter and all these different things.
Right.
So I do kind of like that lesson throughout, of even when they get to the party, and I'm not skipping all the way ahead, but the guy who was in the bathroom when Molly's using the bathroom and she overhears them talking shit about her, the dude who says like, oh yeah, I'd sleep with her, just put a bag over her personality, saying these mean things. When they get to the party, he's like, hey, welcome. I can't believe you made it. Like,
yeah,
these kids are friendly at their core, but it's like they feel the need because it's high school that they have to be exclusionary at the same time. I don't know.
I think also what we learn is that, you know, they have made themselves be excluded, mm-hmm. right? Like Amy and Molly have perpetuated their own exclusion, because you see the opening to, you could have made inroads with these people. You could have made friends with these people at some point. They weren't totally closed off to it. You know, you guys are the ones to some degree, and especially Molly, it's shown, who have determined that these people that you work, go to school with every day are one dimensional. And yeah. part of this experience for her is her learning that they're not, right. you know? And I love that for her, but it just becomes like a slew of hijinks to get to this one party. And you don't really understand why it's so important to get to that party. Because what I love about Amy's character is that she's like, okay, we did it. Like, we went to a party, we can go home now. Like, she's very, you know, she's the tag along a little bit to this excursion. And she's like, okay, but we checked the box. Like, are we done now? And Molly wants to keep going every time. And she's like, I don't understand. Why do we have to keep going? And you find out that it's because she has this crush on this boy that you would not expect her to like.
Yeah.
You know, he's the VP of student council, and he only does that because he gets to plan the dance, and he's an idiot and all this shit that she has talked up to now. And then you find out, girl got a crush.
She's kind of into him.
Yep. She's kind of into him. And isn't that always the way? Like, you're into people that you don't want to admit that maybe, you know, you would like
opposites
them.
Opposites kind of attract. Yeah.
Yeah. Opposites attract. And everybody has a guilty pleasure crush. Like, there's always at least one, right? So this is hers. And it's one of the many things that I love about their dynamic is that they're so non-judgmental of each other, because she could totally roast her right then of how dare you like this guy? This is ridiculous. You talk so much shit about this guy, blah, 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 blah. And instead she's just like, okay, like, this is the plan. We're going to get you to the party with the guy, and vice versa. She's very supportive of Amy's crush on Ryan, and is like, go talk to her. You can do it. You know, I love this for you. Y'all are adorable, blah, 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 blah. They're each other's hype person who wants and thinks only good things for them. And I do really, really like that about their friendship. And it shows up over and over and over out throughout the night. And I love that they have I love that they even have a code of, you have to show up for me no matter what, and that their code is Malala.
Malala. The youngest Nobel Prize winner in history. Good for her.
In history.
For really fucked up reasons, but good for her.
Well, what happened to her was fucked up, and what she
not
did,
the reason
what
she got the
did with
like,
it
yes.
was awesome. And I just, but I love that that's their icon. That's who they reference here. It's so great. And they're super cute about it. But what ends up happening is they go through all these phases of the party, which of course Gigi is wildly at every single one of these parties. And
that's, I had read that they added scenes for Billie Lourd because of how good she was and how she embraced the kid. And then upon rewatch, I feel like she was probably just supposed to be in the boat scene of her jumping off the side of the boat. That was probably meant to be the end of her character, but they just had her appearing at every location.
And I love that it's not explained. It's just a mystery of how she gets from one to one. She doesn't help them figure out where to go. She doesn't help them get there. She's also soaking wet in one, and then she's immediately dry in the next one, and the time it takes them to get there. So she just becomes this funny through line of this extra mysterious, again, like cherry on top character that I think is fun. But they finally get to the party they have been trying to get to, and shit goes down. You know, she's flirting. She thinks she's gotten in with, I think it's Marcus, right? Marcus? Oh, is it Nick? Why do I think Marcus? Maybe that's the actor. Anyway.
It is. It's Marcus Gooding, which, another fun nepotism fact, Cuba Gooding Jr.'s son.
Oh, you know what? He does look like him. That checks out. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Nick's character, she's got a crush on Nick. She's flirting with him, which he is flirting back. I'll give her that. Like, she's not misreading the signals, right?
Yeah. He's like touching her face. This is not a,
she's not doing it wrong. He just is a boy. And
he's a boy. He's a high schooler. So he gets in the pool with somebody else. He's probably going to make out with them if they try and kiss him. So.
The opportunity arises for him to explore another option. And he does, unfortunately. And what I love for Amy there is that she tries to protect her from that fact. I don't know that it is the move, but I understand the impetus. You can tell it's just, it comes from a place of love of like, I don't want you to have to see this. I don't want you to have to deal with this. But of course, that's what leads to this, like, I don't want to leave. And what do you mean we're going to leave? And of course, it explodes as a result.
I personally didn't love, we can explain it with she's trying to protect her friend from not being hurt. But I feel like at the first or second form of pushback of, no, I don't want to leave. Things are going so well. Mm-hmm. If I'm friends with that person, I would, maybe it's just me personally, I would say, I just saw your person, like this guy,
I would say it too.
Get out of here. It does. That's one of those moments I said that kind of feels a little like we're forcing this to happen because we need them to have
an
argument to get to the resolution of this film. So, yeah, I felt like it was a little bit forced, but I get that she at first is trying to protect her friend from getting hurt.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I would tell my friend, I've actually been in a much worse version of the situation, and I told my friend. So I will totally do that. But I understand being afraid to do that. And that also checks out for her character in particular, too, of like, this would be a really hard thing for her to say, I feel like. So I think that's also part of it, is that this is a really passive, kind of chill, go with the flow person who is just along for this ride anyway. And now she has opened up a can of worms and doesn't want to deal with it. So I feel like it's more about her than, you know, and her type of character. But I agree. I would totally tell that person. But I do think, to your point, it's a vehicle for them to have this blow up conflict where Molly doesn't want to go and is just like a hard fucking no. And I have feelings about that. Like, Amy calls Malala. Let's just assume, like, let's ignore that the premise is maybe not great or we don't agree with it. If your friend, if you called Malala earlier in the night,
and your friend went along,
and then your friend went along with it, and then they call it later in the night for other reasons, and you just opt out, like, I got feelings about that. Yeah.
I feel like they could have hinted at more of this eventual conflict earlier in the film, and maybe because I've only seen it, I think this was my third time, I don't remember the earlier conversations.
You're like, I've only seen it 27 times and I'm not sure. So
it might be 27, 28. But like, I felt like that argument of, you always make the decisions and I'm always following you and it's always about what you want. It kind of comes out of nowhere. To make a Superbad reference of it, at least in Superbad, when they have a similar fight, they've spoken about earlier in the film, they've hinted at, oh, I'm not telling my best friend that you and I are rooming together at college because I don't want to hurt his feelings. I feel like they should have left some breadcrumbs about them resenting each other in some way outside of just the obvious, oh, I'm being dragged along, we did the Malala thing,
right,
and now we're going to argue.
Or even just like little comments, you know, even if they're like passive aggressive comments of like,
they didn't even have, I think she mentions the Africa thing of, oh, I'm not just going for the summer, I'm taking the whole year. She doesn't mention that earlier to like, they could have had her say it to her parents. Oh, have you told her yet? Or like, I just think something could have made that feel more organic.
Yeah. It does feel like a pent up everything, which I will say, I think can track. Exactly. Yeah. Like for girls that age, especially, of like, you're kind of in that, that love bubble for a while with your best friend, right? Of like, I love this person so much. They're so great. I can't think of anything wrong with them. And really you have been noticing things wrong with them, but you haven't dealt with them or faced them or what have you. And you have these hormonal things going on as a teenager, and all of a sudden that explodes. Like, that's not improbable to me, you know, that something like that can happen. But I agree with you that like, there's no exposition to that point for sure. And I also think like they come out of it easier than I would think, because it's a pretty big blow up, you know? And for me personally, like if my friend didn't honor the Malala call, whatever it is, you know, I'd be pretty fucking pissed. I'd be pretty betrayed. I'd been like, hey, I was loyal to you. I didn't want to do this thing. This whole thing is your shtick. I came for you. And now I'm calling. And you're just opting out. You're just unsubscribed. Like,
I think it makes logical sense if you're thinking about reality. Because all of us have been in relationships where you have things that are pent up. But then during a big fight, suddenly all these things, it's like, wait, that happened 2 months ago. Why are you mad about that? But I think for the sake of making a film where the audience needs to be in tune to what's happening, I think it misses there. I wanted to call out, there's a couple other things I mentioned earlier in my pre-spoiler rating that a couple things don't, not that they don't land, but they just feel like they had a good idea and they had to find a way to force feed it into this film. One of those, when they're riding with the principal in the lift, which I do think is a funny concept, and it kind of ties back to the Mean Girls of it all, of seeing teachers outside of school.
Yes.
Poor principal.
And he's so fucking weird, too. Like,
I wish, it's funny how many of these movies are relating to each other over this school theme month, but it's just like, I'm pining for Mr. Vernon, who was making $31,000 a year and had a home, like... These poor teachers, as we go on, it gets worse and worse. Man.
Inflation is showing up in the body of work that we are reviewing.
Has to drive for Lyft in this.
Yeah. So, it's fucking wild, man.
But that scene of that, I think that scene is kind of funny, but the whole let's watch porn in the back seat just so we can have this gag of it getting played in the car. It just, that to me was a little forced. I was like, this seems silly. Why are we doing this
right
now?
And it's like... comical sound effects, like it's supposed to be very extra. I understand, but once the sound comes through, you're like, okay,
we were trying to get to this. Okay, like squishing noises and the line. The line was that Cardi B. That's kind of funny.
I know that, but, is. I was just about to say, I do like that takeaway of this funny Cardi B line for sure. But there are lots of fun lines like that that I think are just like these little clever nuggets throughout for sure.
Yeah, I was going to say leading up to that, we have the boat party sequence, which I think might be my favorite. I think from when they hear of the folks going to really prestigious universities to when they get to the actual party, I think that's my favorite block of the film. That like 30 minute journey of getting to the party. And part of that is the boat sequence, where they get picked up by Jared and he has this incredible line where the thing comes on the radio or whatever. And he's like, no, I just have this weird thing where I love to hear powerful women speak before I party because it reminds me of the respect you women deserve. I'm just like, dude, this guy's a gem. Somebody marry this guy.
Somebody
like,
fucking marry this man. This kid is marriage material, not to mention he is loaded. What are you doing with your life? Like, and he's cute. He's got an adorable smile. What? Molly, stop being such an asshole. Like, just see him for what he is.
He is a tryhard, but in the sweetest way possible.
I was gonna say, sometimes tryhards are gems because you know they're gonna keep trying hard.
Yeah.
He's gonna keep it up. You know what I mean? That's
when they pull up to the party and he's got I forget what it's called, but it's get ready to be bashed or something. He's like, no, not like in a violent way. And he says
all his asterisks to everything he says. He's like, you know what I mean? You know, like.
And again, one of my favorite quotables is he says, like, the catering company says it's the coolest party they've ever worked. It's like the catering company,
okay. The people you're paying. You know,
there's no one else there. Like,
but I also love that he does take them there, but then he immediately like gives them an out if they don't want to go. But he's definitely like trying to sell them on it. You know, he's like trying to tell them all the great things. He's like, but I understand. Like, I understand if you don't like if you want to go to the other party, but like you said, a party, and this is the party. You know, like I just love his explanations about his parties in general. He's super sweet. He's a gem that I think we should all, you know, admire from this one and laugh at.
Be
a little better. Exactly. Aspire to be like Jared.
Be a Jared.
But, I love when he does her also like last thing on Jared, I swear. But I love when he comes in and helps with her speech at the end too. And, you know, she taps him in because she's going to be late. And he's like,
you know, he's just ready to go. He's terrified. You can tell. I love that that's coming through of like, I don't really want to do this, but like Molly asked me to do this and like, I'm ready, you know? And
I also like his bluff of when he says to the principal, oh, and she said to tell you about how the senator thing works. When a senator doesn't show up, this person gets in. And the principal's like, okay,
I feel like he's reading something, like reading, he scribbled some notes like of something that she actually said or something. Yeah. It feels like something she said of like, let me fucking justify this. Cause it feels very Molly to me.
Now, one other part that I felt was a little forced, but again, it gets us to some funny gags, and I get the message they're sending here. But what did you think of the tripping balls scene of them transforming into dolls? Like, what were your thoughts on that sequence?
Oh, that sequence. It's it's so weird, first of all. It feels like such a curveball. You know what I mean?
It's out of nowhere.
It's funny. It's funny, but it's kind of to your point earlier of it feels like a bunch of bits in certain spots, not everything. I mean, I think overall the arc is cohesive, but there are like a bunch of bits that feel thrown in there of like, we want to do this one. We want to do this one. That feels like this. This one is, oh, let's check this like crazy. They got, you know, drugs, you know, box. It is still very funny. I think Amy's trip is really funny, especially of, you can tell she doesn't give a shit about like her body or any of that or fashion or whatever. And all of a sudden she's like, listen, I don't want to objectify myself, but damn, like, you know, I just love that. She's like,
I feel like thought it would be like, they had two thoughts. They said, it'll be funny if they trip and they imagine themselves as like Barbie dolls. And then they thought, oh, it'd be funny to use this as a moment to talk about the female form and how unrealistic these expectations are. And I get that. I will say, I thought it was funnier before they had this simultaneous trip, which that doesn't really happen where you both see the same thing.
First
But before that, I love Amy's line where she looks across the room in when they're both in real form and just goes, my mom has a scarf that color, and she's getting emotional. And then she says, one time as a kid, I threw up and my mom caught it in her hands because she loves me. Like, that is a great line.
That whole scene is so funny. Yeah, it just kind of stand alone, though. And they also, the way they come out of it is very funny because they're at the murder mystery party when this happens. And they come out of it. And I love that her, you know, nemesis relationship with the theater kids like continues. And as they're leaving, there's like this snide remark, you know,
roboting out of the house.
They're roboting and like, they just look so silly, but they kind of come out of it quickly and you're like, no, that's your whole night. Like you're gone. Like, what are you talking about? But
I wanted to give the theater kids props though, because
for the legit as fuck murder mystery party,
throws a murder mystery party going against, you know, cross promotionally from the big ass party at the rich kid's house.
Like theater kids.
The theater kids, and they are fully committed. His parents and his sister are locked in the kitchen. Don't talk to the actors.
The theater kids are hyper confident in their shtick. You know what I mean? Yes. And I love that for them because it's super fucking accurate on the whole. And I love that whole scene. I think those are important contributions, like I said, to uncover who these characters actually are and that there are things that they could have gotten along with them. You know, they could have gone to parties with them. They could have been friends with them and they procrastinated and they did it all the night before graduation.
Can I tell you about like, I don't even know what this trope is called. I'll have to go on tvtropes.com or whatever the hell it is. But one of my favorite gags is when someone who someone who wrote a piece of dialogue for a different character, that character is saying it and they mouth it. So when the theater kids in this, I think it's Alan is the one who's giving the performance in the dress. Mm-hmm. He's like, my husband, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then George is clearly the one who wrote this entire script for the murder mystery party, but he's mouthing the words as he says them. Always gets a laugh out of me.
Oh, I love that one. He's the Molly of his clique. You know what I mean? And I think they're supposed to be foils of each other for that reason. And I feel like she would do the exact same shit. She's the control freak. She's the type A who has given everyone a script, has told everybody exactly their roles, and expects them to execute. You know what I mean? And like, that's him, in his theater group. You know what I mean? Or the Lamar of the theater group. This is you. Do you identify with both of these characters? I feel like.
I think I would definitely be.
Like you would throw this party.
The George that's like, stay in character. You don't have to do that every time they come in. Like, absolutely. Yeah. I would be directing the action here to make sure it's perfect. Yes.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Well, so they go through this whole rigmarole. They have this big fight. And then Molly's character. So actually, I'm sorry. Taking one quick step back. Amy gets really brave. At the end here, the party's getting broken up. Shit has gone down. The fight has already happened. She's had a really traumatic experience with her first, you know, sexual, like lesbian encounter with somebody more experienced than herself. She's trying to do her best. It doesn't go great, right? So she's feeling a little.
You want to go into detail about what? No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, do we want to go into detail?
No, I don't think we have to. Watch the movie, everybody.
Watch the movie. It's a little TMI for me right now. Yeah. But yeah, so she's like coming out of that. She's feeling kind of some kind of way. The party's about to get broken up. Police have shown up and Amy sacrifices herself and goes out, distracts them all so people can escape, gets arrested. And her arrest is one of the funniest moments in the movie where she's just like, you know, she's like, I don't have a gun. I'm just kidding. I don't have a gun. And she's like roasting the cops.
Well, no, she says shotgun as if like she's going to ride in the front of the cop car. But then she segues to like, just kidding. I don't have a gun.
Shotgun. Just kidding. I don't have a gun. I'm sorry. And like, you can tell she's just all too aware of a lot of context, but she's also lightly roasting the cops the whole time she's being arrested. And I think it's just kind of like she's in that like don't give a fuck mode at this point. And it's kind of funny to see her trajectory over the course of the night because like she kind of didn't want to be here for almost any of this. And now she's the person getting arrested at the end of the night, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting. She does say out loud,
you know, the mushrooms, you know,
this sort of exposition at the end where she says I'm brave out loud to like demonstrate why she's doing this to sort of prove her friend wrong.
Yeah,
so that does feel pretty earned. I don't know, the whole bathroom thing seems a little weird to me. It just seemed like a reason to have. I don't think we needed that scene.
I think it's, you know what, but I think that is, I think that's a I think that's a teen like core embarrassment memory trope, right? Like as much as they haven't gotten to experience all the fun that you could have in high school, they've also really protected themselves from the embarrassment of putting themselves out there in these situations. Yeah. And it is unlikely that they just go into this whole night unscathed. You know, I think that's true of, you know, any kid who puts themselves at risk at this age. And she was most certainly being really daring with this girl. So it seems likely to me that she would have this like core embarrassing memory moment.
That's potentially fair. I feel like they probably should have given this character more lines before we got to that point. Cause I think she's in that initial classroom scene.
Yeah.
She kind of mocks her with like one line of dialogue and then we don't see her again until the party.
I think we just see her as like the mysterious snarky hot girl. You know, she's like, that's her trope.
With fringe.
And that's her trope. Yeah. And then now she's like, kind of into her and she doesn't, you know, Amy's not really expecting that. And I think she cashes in, which like good for her. Again, she's breaking new boundaries, but yeah, sometimes those bets don't always work out. You know, sometimes they turn out to be a really embarrassing story.
Now, another sort of questionable thing, which they have some dialogue that explains it away, but how did you feel about Miss Fine coming to a high school party and
hooking up with a student? I felt real not great about that. I felt like that was super inappropriate. I also felt like I knew teachers like that when I was in high school, like one or two who would have done that. Like, don't get me wrong, they didn't do that. But I knew one or two that I was like, looks familiar. Like, I immediately thought of one or two people that I was like, okay. Checks out. But no, I don't think that that's appropriate at all. And she sleeps with that
line of dialogue where he, earlier in the movie, we hear that he failed seventh grade three times and he says the law of threes, which again, great line. He doesn't expand upon it. He just says law of threes.
Law of threes, obviously.
But so she says to him before anything happens, you're 20, right? So he's 20 years old. Like,
she lays the groundwork.
Legal,
why
like
did she walk into the party?
Why did she go to this fucking party?
Right. That like the hookup question. You can explain and try to justify sort of esque, but like, why did she walk into the party? Is she really that bored? Is she like hunting for kids? Or is she like, I'm just really bored on a Friday night? It felt worrisome. I was like, I have questions.
I think they're trying to demonstrate that teachers make mistakes. There are shitty teachers out there for sure. And they even have that line where she says, you know, I'm banned from Jamba Juice, like the entire chain. So it's like, she's not that she's not a good person.
But she has let her crazy decisions out at the end. And at the beginning, she's presented to be this really wholesome teacher who cares a lot about Molly and Amy. And she's like wanting to be a resource for them and is kind of a mentor to them. And then slowly her crazy comes out. And yeah, absolutely. There are teachers like that. Like I said, I can think of a couple, but I still thought it was like a really weird thing to portray as kind of funny, you know, like we were supposed to find that funny. Yeah.
It's played for laughs the same way as it was in Mean Girls, but it's like, either don't put that in, don't have the teacher as a main character. Or make it
not heroic, not funny.
Be like, oh, this is inappropriate, because even at the end, she shows up at graduation, and again, it's played as a joke.
It's played for laughs.
Well, it's okay, he's legal.
And she's like, in his ear at the graduation, you know, and you're like, what? It was so, it made me itch, for sure. Okay, well, last piece I think we should touch on before we wrap up is, so graduation day is here. Amy has been arrested. Molly goes to the jail and is like, I'm going to get you out of here. And there's a throwback, callback bit of comedy that's been woven throughout that we haven't touched on, which is they try to get a lift or a car, you know, ride, whatever, from this pizza guy who has delivered to the party. They're trying to discover where the party is. And he lectures the shit out of them for breaking into a car of somebody they don't know. Could be a murderer, could be a sociopath, all these things. He lectures them. He's totally right, by the way, on all counts. These girls are being silly. And
I like that they're just using their ponytails.
They're
like,
using their ponytails as masks, which, by the way, they had 37 hairbands on them to achieve this, but okay. So they do this, whatever, all that happens. She goes to the jail to talk to Amy. They make up, which feels a little unearned, like I was saying earlier. I was like, they make up a little bit quickly for me, but okay. But my favorite part about the whole thing is like, how is she going to get her out of jail? She hasn't been bailed out. I don't know why that hasn't happened. It feels like her parents would have showed up by now, but whatever. And she slams the wanted poster of that guy who you did see. If you catch it, you see the wanted poster as you walk into the precinct. She slams the wanted poster on the window and says, because we have seen this man. And it says, have you seen this man? And it's the creepy guy from the car, the pizza delivery guy who's apparently
that actor's name is Michael Patrick Bryan, and not a very recognizable name or face. But if anybody watches I Think You Should Leave, which is a Netflix comedy series, he's in that as there's a skit where it's like, you gotta give. People who watch the series will know what I'm talking about. He's the main guy in that scene. So.
I haven't seen it, but he plays this well. And it's funny because he looks like, if you listen to or watch a lot of true crime like me, he looks like every generic serial killer you've ever seen.
He's very much what's the actor that's in the Jeffrey Dahmer show?
That actor, but he's very like a Jeffrey Dahmer.
He's like doing that, like the glasses, everything.
100%. So I love that she trades information on the serial killer whose car they definitely got into and somehow survived to get her out. And then they have a great scene of rushing to graduation and getting there in Jared's car and the big like kiss moment for Jerry and Molly. And it feels like, and this is an oversimplification, but it feels like the stick has finally been kind of pulled out of Molly's ass a little bit overnight. And she's like, fuck it. And that's her growth.
And you've put it so simply, but I think that's kind of the point of this, is I like that there's a lesson in this, but it's not necessarily one that we've seen in a bunch of other high school movies. Yeah. Like, the lesson in this is just get to know people, give people a chance. Maybe you don't know everything that everyone else is going through, and the relationship that they have, it might feel a little rushed because they're making out, you know, 24 hours after even liking each other at all. Opposed to not being familiar with each other. But it's just because she took the time to have this conversation and he talked about how much he respected her and how he values that she does what she wants. And she sort of,
I could kiss a guy under those circumstances. 100%. He's got me sold. You know what I mean? He's wholesome AF.
Graduation day?
It doesn't have to be graduation day. That's what I'm saying. Like that's an extra special moment. Like that's definitely the cherry on top here. So why wouldn't you kiss him? It's almost required because it's graduation day. You know what I mean? No, I love that. I feel like it is a good payoff for her and for them. And I think it takes like, it does send this message of like, don't put so much pressure on yourself, like live a little, not, you know, don't be an idiot. And I like that they call that out with AAA later as, you know, also saying like, hey, yes, I'm excellent at blowjobs, but I also got a 1560 on the SATs, right? Of like, you can be well-rounded. You can have personality. You can do other things. And I just love that assertion. And like, you have like a Google coder, the guy who's failed seventh grade three times is going to go code at Google.
Yeah, he's got a job at Google.
And the other guy's going to play soccer at Stanford and, you know, all of that. So it's like, these people didn't just do school and they are potentially really interesting as well. And I like that she has, you know, in the last 24 hours kind of learned that a little bit and that they have, you know, come back together as best friends. And that does feel a little fast for me, but I think that's the nature of this timeline that we're dealing with. It kind of has to be fast.
Yeah.
But I think that their last scene after that, where they go to the airport and she's dropping her off, not the parents, her best friend is dropping her off, is so sweet and wholesome, but they're like awkward about it. And because they're,
I'm glad they have the extra 30 seconds at the end, because when they just say goodbye and she gets out of the car and walks like, away and they're both okay with it initially, I was like, that just doesn't
I think
right.
They're not okay with it, but they're like trying not to make it a big deal. I think they're trying really hard to not make it a big deal, even though it's a big deal. And I just love that she's like, fuck it. You know, do you want to go get pancakes? And she's like, fuck yeah, I do. And it just
like cut to black. Yeah.
It feels like they're back. You know what I mean? It feels like, okay, they're going to be fine. Both of them. And I think it's just a really wholesome, sweet ending on the whole. And I think the water balloon credits are super fun too.
Those are a fun closing credits. If you're going to rank all time best closing credits, I think water balloons to the face of all the major characters are.
And I just love the different reactions, you know, like everybody has a different reaction. And I think some of them like sort of vibe with their characters of like people who just like stone face take it, you know, and people who are like really anxious. And it just, it kind of checks out. So I think overall,
at the end of the
fun day,
like, Amy and Molly get what they, one of my favorite takeaways from this movie is at the beginning when Molly says, you know what I'm going to get tonight? A seminal, fun anecdote. And I think that's what we should all go into every night out, especially at the age of 40. Every night out, every party, like that's what I'm looking for at the end of the
seminal,
night. Just give me a
fun anecdote.
You know?
I love that she has like a fucking rubric for what she expects from this night out too, though. It's super checks out. So anyway, I would say I think it's a great time. We've raved about it for quite a fucking while. What would your rating be?
I think I'm going to stay with what I said pre-spoilers. I don't think a lot changes because I do think it's super enjoyable and everyone out there should absolutely watch it because there are, at the very least, a lot of laughs to be had, regardless of whether you relate to the story or you think some of it feels forced, which I do. I just think at the end of the day, it's a movie that I will rewatch again. I think even if with all my critiques today, I'm going to watch it again because it's a funny film. Yeah. So I would stick with like a 7. Some of the stuff we didn't even get into, the library scene doesn't really pay off at all because they just end up watching a video on social media of the pizza thing. And they they have this scene where they go to the library, but it doesn't mean anything. So I think the whole joke
other than
is
that
just,
they're nerds and that you're refuge.
That's what I mean is it's just the one joke of them walking in and fist bumping the librarian. That's the only reason that scene exists.
But one, it's hilarious. And two, it's true. When in doubt, go to the library, you know, but
yeah. And also I will, on the flip side of that, I will say one of my favorite scenes that we didn't talk about was the karaoke, which again, it's a short scene.
Yeah.
But I love
Amy like George? Cutting loose a little
bit. I love George doing You Ought to Know.
Yeah.
And him, his like, I am hat. And he's like sticking his thumb.
He's like
tongue out.
Really like overdo it. Yeah. And he's like making fun of her. He's like pitchy, but still good. And like, yes. She's doing excellent, you know? And then by the end, he can't help it. He's cheering, you know? Yeah.
And when he says, you ought to know. And I think he says Alan or something. He says a name, but he's like, you ought to know Alan. Like that. Just again, the side characters make this movie for me.
They really do. It would not be the same without it. It would not be the same without those side characters. It's funny. The criticisms make me kind of go up and down, but I'm still kind of around the same area, you know, talking it through. I mean, has kind of reminded me of, oh yeah, this didn't really quite stick or whatever, but I started at an 8.5. I would stick in that range, maybe an 8, 8.5, yeah. Something like that. Cause I just, again, just talking about the side characters just now, I'm like, oh, this is just so fun. Like the side characters are so fun. And I agree. I will totally rewatch it. It's going to make me crack up again. I know it. So
I think I gave it a 7 at the beginning. I would stick with a 7, but I would say if I were 20 years younger, it'd probably be like an 8.5. I think if I were younger and could relate to it.
But oh my God. So are you saying I look 20 years younger than you?
That must be what it is. That's exactly what I meant.
I think that's what you meant. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. All right, y'all. Thanks for hanging with this one. We obviously had a really good time. This was a long one. So we really appreciate you coming and hanging for this chat. Come back next week for a new theme, a new month. It is my personal favorite month, and I think maybe yours too, right? Like October,
it's
Halloween.
It's Rocktober.
Spooky fucking season is here. I was just telling Lamar that I think it's pre-fall right now. So like, get your spooky shit out. Get ready. We're ready out here on the pod. And we're going to kick it off with what I was very surprised that I loved, a film that I wouldn't normally see, The Babadook. It was an interesting one. It was a good time. And it's creepy. So if you haven't watched it yet, it's on Netflix. Watch it before it comes out. I think before the pod comes out, I think it'll be a good time.
Yeah, we're going to do a variety of different films this month. But we wanted to start with The Babadook because that's one that we both like. And I don't remember what movie we were watching, but where we talked about elevated horror. And you said, oh, I like that term. This is definite. Babadook is definitely an example
elevated horror.
Elevated horror, yeah.
Yes, yes. Where did I say that? That was so smart. Anyway, in the meantime, before we watch The Babadook.
You didn't say it. It was from Scream 5.
Damn it.
And you said, oh, I really like that. But in Scream 5, it's like a meta term for.
We didn't have to go down the rabbit hole of figuring it out. Okay. I thought we were in compliment McKenzie
mode. I just don't want people to be like critical and be like, she didn't invent that term. Look, we know what it is. Okay. It means
whatever.
I'm better than you horror. Those are the kind of movies that McKenzie likes. So.
Straight facts. I'm better than you horror is my brand of horror for sure. Wow. Okay. Well, in the meantime, before you hear me go off about the I'm better than you, The Babadook, what else should they do?
You should follow us on social at We Drink and We Watch Things, Instagram and TikTok. We're posting reels weekly, bi-weekly, something like that, whenever we can with clips of the shows and whatnot. You can always watch the video portions on YouTube as well. But big one is make sure that you email us at WeDrinkAndWeWatchThingsPod@gmail.com because we have our 1-year anniversary coming up in like 3 weeks or so. Will be our 1 year of our first episode, and we want to celebrate in style by reviewing some of our favorite episodes, some of the movies that we discovered this year, some of the ones we hated the most this year. But we want to hear from you guys, and we're not giving any specific criteria on this. You can talk about what movie we covered that you loved the most. You could talk about what episode was the most fun listen or what you wish we could do, anything at all. There's no criteria. Send us a message, send us a voice memo, send us a voice, whatever. And we will pick our favorites. And whoever ends up being our favorite on that 1 year anniversary will get one of those awesome $200 We Drink and We Watch Things koozies.
Yeah. And I will be sure to post a picture of that soon so you can remember how awesome it is and how badly you want it. But like Lamar said, we're open to any and all feedback and ideas. And of course, you can DM us on Instagram or TikTok now as well. If that's easier for you. But yeah, be sure to let us hear from you ahead of that anniversary ep, which is coming in October on the 23rd. So wish us a happy anniversary as well. But anyway, between now and then, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.
I have a very muted clink with this mug. It's just not the same.